evening, everyone. My name is Joelle Robinson, and the title of today's presentation is Examining Community-Based Strategies for Tobacco Prevention in the District of Columbia. All right, so just to give you all a little bit of background, in March of 2010, the D.C. Department of Health was awarded funding for what's known as Communities Putting Prevention to Work, which is a two-year cooperative agreement with the Center for Disease Control. And in that funding, the D.C. Department of Health was charged with implementing what's known as the MAP strategies into their tobacco control program. So the focus, what's different about this funding opportunity is that the focus is on policy systems and environmental changes. After receiving the funding, the D.C. Department of Health then reached out to community and nonprofit organizations, what I will refer to as the Community Catalyst grantees, and eight organizations were awarded funding from the Department of Health to engage in community mobilization projects around access, price, and point of purchase tobacco restrictions. So today, I hope to point out the innovative and effective strategies for gaining community support around tobacco restrictions, identify the barriers and strategies faced by both the D.C. Department of Health and the community grantees in implementing policy systems and environmental changes, and describe efforts to try and evaluate all the work that's being done and compile everyone's efforts into some sort of meaningful presentation. Again, this is just a little bit of information on Communities Putting Prevention to Work, or CPPW, and the MAP strategies. MAP stands for Media Access, Point of Purchase or Point of Decision Making, Price, and Social Support. And these are just examples of what's meant by media, so counter-advertising, access usage bans like smoke-free housing or smoke-free air policies, point of purchase, which has to do with restricting power walls or restricting tobacco advertising, price obviously increasing the price of tobacco, and social support, which usually refers to different mechanisms such as quit lines. This is just a little bit about the tobacco landscape in D.C. So the district already currently has a smoke-free air policy known as the Smoke-Free Workplaces Policy, which was implemented in 2007. And so it basically restricts smoking in different workplaces. The district also has the 10th highest cigarette tax. I believe it's at $2.50. Recently, there was an amendment to the Healthy Schools Act, which expanded the smoke-free workplaces to schools and school campuses. And obviously, the district has an existing quit line, which residents are able to utilize and call who want to seek smoking cessation services. So obviously, the district already had a pretty aggressive anti-tobacco, tobacco restriction environment. So with that said, they were charged with going after more aggressive policies and just pushing the envelope and doing more against tobacco restrictions. So these eight different objectives are the objectives for DC CPPW project. And just briefly, one is around media. So they're supposed to implement a media campaign district-wide that targets various populations, African Americans, Hispanic, youth, LGBTQ, and people living in select wards that are known to have a higher prevalence of tobacco usage. School buffer zones is another policy which the district is seeking to try and implement a policy that restricts tobacco retailers from being within 100 feet of schools, increasing the tobacco retailer licensing fee, tobacco-free universities, smoke-free public housing, advertising and power wall restrictions, banning price discounts, because as I mentioned, there's already a high tobacco tax, so the next step would be in banning discounts and then expanding the impact and reach of the existing quit line. So the key components to this project, again, as I mentioned, were the community catalyst grantees or the nonprofit organizations, the leadership team, which is comprised of various department heads throughout the district's government agencies, and their role is basically to help facilitate policy development and passage. The Tobacco-Free Coalition, which is comprised of various stakeholders and advocates in tobacco control in the district, and obviously the DC Department of Health Tobacco Control Program. So this slide basically just outlines the various community catalyst grantees. So there are 8 different community organizations that are implementing 10 projects. So 2 organizations are doing 2 different projects. And each organization has a different focus and a different target audience. So it makes for an interesting task in trying to coordinate everyone's activities. So again, how do we coordinate and evaluate the work that everyone is doing in trying to create systems and policy changes in the district? So basically, this just is the program logic of what we're trying to achieve. The community catalyst grantees and the Department of Health, through media campaigns and community mobilization, create awareness around tobacco issues. Community support swells and is gained and demonstrated through various methods via signatures or letters of support or things of that nature. New tobacco policies and restrictions are enacted and enforced. Tobacco usage and exposures decrease. Improved health outcomes for a district resident. So what we're trying to evaluate now is basically how the first two steps in the logic model. So how is community support gained? How are different tobacco stakeholders and community members engaged? What are the barriers to implementing policy changes? And how can we demonstrate this or present this information in a meaningful way? So in going about this evaluation, I conducted a qualitative analysis, which involved in-person and phone interviews with the various stakeholders, DOH staff, the community organizations, and the different people working on the project. And I used Atlas TI software to analyze the data. Also, each grantee utilizes a quarterly milestone report that's basically done for monitoring to make sure that people are on track with their work plan and things of that nature. So the information from there was also used and kind of pulled together to be able to speak to what the impact of the overall CPPW project and initiative was. And also, we will be conducting a population-based phone survey to assess the general change or attitudes around new tobacco policies and new tobacco restrictions. All right, so as I mentioned, the quarterly reporting basically draws from the work plans of the different community organizations. So in attempting to operationalize reach, participation, and impact of what the nonprofits are doing, I took each of their performance measures and grouped it into a category, again, under either reach, participation, or impact. And so, for example, one milestone or measure to assess reach might be the number of attendees at a campaign launch, things of that nature. For participation, it might be the number of youth community advocates who go out and educate their peers or peer educators. And then impact is the actual number of people who say, yes, I'm in support of this particular policy. So, again, this information is based on the work that was completed as of September, so as of last month. The grantees are still in the process of conducting their work and conducting their projects, so these numbers display what has been accomplished thus far. The obvious limitations is that their, you know, the overlapping individuals. Someone could be counted twice, that the young person could also be living in wards 5 through 8, and they could also be LGBT. So especially when thinking of trying to assess reach, it becomes more difficult to actually assess the reach of what your project was. For impact and participation, it's the likelihood that you're double counting someone isn't as high, but for reach, that's definitely a limitation. Obviously, assessing policy implementation within a 2-year time frame is very difficult. To even get a policy put through within a 2-year time frame is extremely difficult, but we do what we can. And again, community support doesn't mean policy change. Just because the whole community can say, yes, we want tobacco restrictions for schools, we want that. We have a bajillion signatures that say we want that. Doesn't necessarily mean that the policy is going to get passed. The second part of the evaluation that I mentioned earlier was the qualitative analysis. So, as I mentioned, I conducted interviews with the different stakeholders and community partners. And so some of the emerging themes that came out as effective means for community engagement were partnerships. Partnerships was a key component. It just kept coming up over and over again, as I'm sure you already know. Partners can provide in-kind services. They're often the gatekeepers to where and who you need to talk to. They have information and just access. They're key. Everybody relies on partners. Nobody works alone. Knowing your community, obviously the demographics, their history, their preferences, is very important. And then that also ties into a relationship-based approach. So a lot of our community grantees talked about, you know, that face-to-face interaction, actually getting to know the people in your community and having them recognize your face and being right there in front of individuals. And so that versus online interaction or online engagement, I know it's 2011 and everybody wants to use, you know, new technology and all that's fine. But again, I think that goes back to knowing your community and one community that might be appropriate where, you know, Twitter and Facebook and all those things are effective means for engagement, whereas in another community that might be older or doesn't have as much access to technology or literacy, has lower literacy levels, that might not work. Nobody will be able to access the information. Using visual aids and interactive demonstrations is always very helpful. GIS mapping is something that the Department of Health is exploring. So this map looks at the school areas overlaid with tobacco retailers, and the dots with the triangles around them are tobacco retailers who have had SINAR violations. So this is an effective tool in, you know, presenting it to communities and community stakeholders. Barriers and challenges are obviously the time constraints, reporting fatigue. CPPW has a lot of reporting, and that was something that was definitely mentioned again and again. Another thing is unclear expectations about the rules and regulations. Again, because this is a policy focused initiative, there is a little bit of unclarity about what organizations, especially nonprofit organizations, are able to do in quote-unquote advocacy or, you know, pushing policy change. And so that was a little bit, or what the proper authorities were in trying to get different policies passed. So that was a bit of a challenge. Situational things like deaths and not having access to certain spaces, language barriers, and obviously engaging current smokers and current tobacco users. So the lessons learned obviously would be to identify proper authorities in advance, have clear expectations in advance, and allow substantial time for the bureaucratic red tape of working in the government. Moving forward, we would like to solidify the expectations of what organizations are able to do, continue this evaluation of the impact of CPPW via the phone survey that I mentioned earlier, disseminate and present the findings to appropriate stakeholders, and continue to explore effective methods for engaging tobacco retailers and for engaging current smokers and their families. So that's it, and thank you.